And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 740, containing our team-by-team previews to get you ready for the fantasy baseball season. We head to talk Cincinnati Reds over at Great American Ballpark. Always a fun offensive discussion, questions around pitching, what to do. And there might be some more platooning going on this year, which as more news comes out of spring. So I'm really curious to hear the thoughts from one Reds fan and one legendary fantasy expert. You can find him over on VSiN now. He's on SiriusXM all the time. RotoWire, of course, is where things really got cooking for this man. You can find him on Twitter at Jeff_Erickson. Jeff Erickson, how you doing, my friend?
I'm always good talking baseball, Bubba. You know, playing golf or talking baseball, these are the two most favorite things there. So we're all good.
Yep, we're all good. That's two things we've got to do. So that's always always fun. I'll hopefully get you out for golf this year if the scheduling changes. So that'll be great as well. Before we get into Reds talk, why don't you let everybody know what you have going on, because you are quite busy these days.
Yeah, this is Talk Too Much Tuesday for me. I had SiriusXM from 8 to 10 in the morning, best coast time. 11 to noon, I'm on Visa. It's called VSiN. It's called Prop Points. Myself and Nick Whalen hosting that as well. We got the RotoWire podcast a couple days a week there, Sunday with Scott Jenstad, Tuesdays with Fred Zinke. And I'm on the NFBC High Stakes Fantasy Advantage on Wednesday night with Tom Kesnick. So a lot of talking, and it's a good time, and really enjoying it. And of course, check out RotoWire, rotowire.com/pod, get you a free peek behind the paywall. You can check out our projections, our draft kit, all that good stuff that we're hopefully that you'll want to subscribe to after you check out the free trial.
Yeah, it's always my little blurb I mention every time I have you on or James on or whatever, that I've been a RotoWire subscriber since college. So it's one of the sites I basically say is a must go, like, just if anything for the pitching chart every the matchup every week. That's like my go-to during the season. It's one of my tabs that's open like just all the time. It's
absolutely, it's, you know, because I always find the projected starters are great just for figuring out my matchups, but also it's a good quick and dirty way to find free agents too, because you sync that up with my leagues. And then you see who's available right away. You know, you see who has got the two steps that are unrostered. And you also see like, oh, Pirates, let's go. This guy's available. Let's go. This is my stream for the week.
Yep, 100%. It gets you the pitchers, the two steps in that regard, but also who to stream against, all those kind of things like you mentioned. So great tool. Go check out RotoWire, everybody. Get the free trial and enjoy. But let's get to it. Cincinnati Reds, Jeff. It's a team that you've gone through the ups and downs with throughout the years, of course. Seems like we were on the ups, maybe not so fast, it feels like, but you never know. Like, there's about a lot of young talent. First off, before we talk players, what were your thoughts on how 2024 went?
It was a disaster, unmitigated disaster. There was all this positivity, all this hope, and it started right away in spring training. You know, Matt McClain went down early. We had Noelvé Marte actually get hurt in winter ball and then get suspended. It was just one thing after another string, you know, endless string of injuries and underperformances. CES got hurt, missed most of the season. We don't know what he is going to be anymore. A lot of the players that were breaking out in 2023 turned back into a pumpkin. I'm looking at like Will Benson as an example of that. Nick Lodolo got hurt again, although he's healthy now, so that's good at least. I'd say that besides Ellie De La Cruz, the other really positive thing was we had a pretty healthy season on Hunter Green. He still spent some time on the IL, but we saw a big step forward with him. So that was a real positive thing, but you know, it ended up costing the manager, David Bell, his job. And I don't see a ton of reason for hope that they could win the division this year because of the lack of activity this offseason. I like seeing Tito Francona get hired. There should be some bounce back there. And the fact that the Cardinals have done actually nothing this offseason is one thing that's a real positive as a Reds fan. But nonetheless, I still think it's kind of be a tricky thing there to see a scenario there where they are one of the heavies. And, you know, it's going to require some leap forwards that we haven't seen yet.
Yeah, and again, the young players, so you never know when those leaps, if those leaps will take place. So there's hope, and Tito, that's a phenomenal hire for a team trying to figure out his identity more than anything. Like, Tito will at least get things in line, I would imagine. He's a good, obviously everyone knows he's a player's coach, so that'll go a long, long ways there. And you mentioned Hunter Green. I can't wait to talk about him here in a little bit because I have questions for that as well. But let's start on the offensive side of things. And for the listeners, I'm using NFBCOC ADP for the last couple of weeks just for reference points here. But we're going to talk Ellie De La Cruz, Jeff. He's going inside the top five. He's around four or five, depending on your league right now. We saw the polarization of Ellie De La Cruz, like elite months, then like a down month, then elite month. That's what he does. He's just up, down, up, down roller coaster. In a roto league, that's fine though. Hits 259, 25 homers, 67 stolen bases head to head. That might be a little more frustrating type thing. But how do you look at Ellie coming after one full season now? We saw the whole story, but I think there's so many different versions of the story when it comes to Ellie.
Yeah, there are. And I think the first thing we have to start off with Ellie De La Cruz is 23. That's how old he is. You know, he's so polarizing, yet he did this at age 21 and 22. Age to level is so important. We're discussing these players. Yes. Does he strike out too much? Absolutely. He does. Is there room for improvement? Absolutely. There is. There's going to be a year where he could go 40-40. I mean, that is still a possibility. The discourse in Ellie has changed dramatically this year from last. And I was one of the naysayers last year. I thought he was going too expensively, in drafts. Now I'm on board with him being a top five player. The start that he got off in April was really dreadful. You know, he struck out so much early. There was even some rumbling. Do they need to send him down or at least move him down in the order? That's not in play anymore. That's done. That's vetted. And we see the upside. We see the stolen base upside. As he gets bigger, as he gets older, does he run less? Probably. But I don't think that happens this year.
Yep. No, I don't. Rob Silver had his. Did you see Rob Silver's thread on Ellie running at all on Twitter?
No, I had. I missed that so far.
It's over the weekend. It's an interesting one because he breaks down in typical Rob fashion of like, you know, expected stolen bases and attempts and this and that. Regardless, he stole 67 bases, is the way I'm going to say it. Rob's hasn't declining, but even if Ellie steals 45 bases, like he's doing,
right,
you know, yeoman's work out there and going for it. I think he's got more power more than anything that we haven't seen yet. So, yeah, it's very enticing. I have struggled with it because I like just like a really, really solid floor that I know I can trust that early in the draft. But, like, if you're cool handling volatility, I agree. There's nothing wrong with him at all at pick four at that ADP. TJ Friedl, this is a name that I've been suckered into after his 18 homer, 27 stolen base season. Last year hit 13 homers, 9 steals at 226, but was hurt a ton. So I say suckered into it, but I can't predict hit by pitches and a bunch of other goofiness. Are we buying back into TJ Friedl with an ADP of 264 right now?
Yeah, I guess. I think he was, you know, the power that we saw he teased us with is probably not coming back in terms of 18 homers. But even in although I say that, and he still hit 13 in 85 games last year. So I think there's some upside there. I haven't been in on Friedl so far in my early drafts, but I could convince myself. I could tell myself the story there that he could still end up 15-30, you know, 15-20. And I could see that possibly happening there. But it is interesting. You know, the thing is, they need to kind of, you know, watching what the Reds do with all their extra players. You know, we talked about this problem last year and it ended up being a fake problem because everybody got hurt, and including Friedl. But yeah, it's something to watch for. I want to address your hit by pitch thing here, because I do think that there's some repeatability in that. Certain players, Anthony Rizzo, Starling Marte, they make this career out of getting hit by pitches. And it boosts their OBP. And I think you look at Friedl so far in his major league history, he's kind of right there with that. And we saw the downside to that. You know, he broke a wrist because he got hit by a pitch, but 7, 10, and 12 the last 3 years in terms of the hit by pitches. Certain players, it's just where their stance is, how they incorporate that as part of their game.
It's a good point. It's a very good point. If it's something he does and, you know, top of the order probably crowds the plate a bit, or they know to throw him inside, who knows? There's many directions to that. Could be something that does not stop. That is very, very true. Very curious your thoughts here on Matt McClain, a guy that missed all of last season due to injury after a very, very productive rookie season where we saw, you know, 16 and 14 at the big league level, hit 290, optimism was high, goes and plays outfield in the fall league. People were thinking that's where he's going to go. Now, like a couple days ago or a day ago, they're saying he's primarily playing second base. That's right. It. Which, again, you and I both know what news comes out at the early February of camp, we can all take with a grain of salt as injuries and stuff change things up. But McClain looks to be the second baseman. ADP is just inside 100. Are we back in on this? Are we good with him at second base? No, like there's a million questions I have, but where are you at on this after seeing one season of success and then a full season missed on the IL?
I mean, it is a little bit of a leap of faith. It has to be necessarily, but I'm excited about it. I do think that in the case of McClain, I like that Terry Francona said that he would like to see him at one position. When it comes from the manager, I'm willing to buy into it a little bit more. And I like that they're saying, okay, he's a second baseman. I hope the Reds as an organization have learned from the experience with Nick Senzel. Stop moving guys around that are these high pedigree prospects. Just let them develop. Let them play at one spot. And I know McClain was originally a shortstop. I think they even dabbled at third a little bit with him at one point in time, outfield a little bit with him in the fall league. Just leave him at second base. Let him be the guy there. I know they got Gavin Lux, and that's the reason that kind of fueled a little bit more speculation on that. But I think you have to kind of just leave him alone.
Yeah, stop trying to make fetch happen, guys. It's just let it be and see where it goes. But I'm very, very enticed by him. I'm excited about a 2020 upside there to see where it goes. A catcher I've been taking a ton as my catcher two in certain formats, or if I really miss on catcher, my catcher one, but is Tyler Stevenson. I still keep going back to a couple years ago, that skill set that we saw that I think we got a little glimpse of it again last year. Mm-hmm. And hitting the middle of the order is interesting to me. He has an ADP of 145, Jeff. Am I crazy for the Stevenson love, or should we be back in on him?
No, I think that's solid. I think he's going at price. I think that's where I'm comfortable taking him as like catcher 11, catcher 12. He played more behind the plate last year than they had committed to in previous years. Remember, spent a lot of time with him at first base and DH, didn't necessarily love his pitch calling skills. Well, they got more comfortable with that last year, and the pitching was fine last year, and his bat actually kind of took a step up. If he's batting in the middle of that lineup, especially in home games, I really like that. I'm on board with that price.
All righty. Spencer Steer used to be like the Swiss Army knife, lost, I think, one position of eligibility. He's only first base outfield now. Still very valuable to have that CI outfield situation there. Dealing with a shoulder injury to start off camp, but they're saying it's not that bad. Again, we'll see on that. His ADP is around 125 right now. Are we still doing the Steer thing? Because, you know, 2025 last year, average was down, but really good production.
Yeah, and you know, that average was more in line with his debut season in 2022. I think you could take a chance on him. I wanted to make some sort of Steer clear pun, but I'm not going to. I'm not going to do that to you guys here. One other thing that Francona said is that they'd like to see him in one position too. Yeah, he goes, we're not going to move him around as much. So that's a positive also, I think. I think that position's left field eventually. I think the ideal setup for the Reds is you put Steer in left field and you leave CES alone at first base. But we don't know if CES is going to be ready. I'm talking about Christian Encarnacion Strand. We got a lot of players to kind of fill in there. So we got to have to figure this part all out here still.
Well, it's like you said at the beginning of the show, we did the show last year. Seemed like there's a lot of depth by opening day. Here we are. So injuries, it's like the old, we're all going to do a six-man rotation until you can't. So that's just the way it goes. Heimer Candelario, an oldie but goodie here. A little bit of a down season, I'd say 225, 20 homers, four steals. Did battle like a forearm injury. They played through for a while when he was struggling before finally getting that taken care of. Looks like he'll be out starting at first base, I think, for now until maybe CES is good to go. Candyman has an ADP of 333. Are we just like, hey, it's time to move on, or is there still some juice to be squeezed there?
Baffling signing at the time, and it played out poorly there. He's still got two more years left on that contract, plus a team buyout for a team option for 2027. 2020 did a lot of work in buffeting him, looking as a possible 290, possible batting average guy when he hit 297 in that shortened season. And then 2021, he still hit for average, but 225 might be his level. In 2022, he hit 217. He's okay. He could be better in this ballpark. Last year was a disappointment, but he's had other years like that. And so this might be what you see is what you get. Added some weight. They said it was for muscle. That of course, muscle does weigh more than fat. So we'll take him on his word on that one there. You try to get through the season. You know, it's I wouldn't say it's best shape of life guy, but it's a shape. So we'll see.
I tell everybody I'm a shape too. I'm round, guys. So you pick your shape. Gavin Lux, this one at first glance, okay, cool. He probably needed out of LA, get him a new change of scenery. Ballpark will help him out. But now it's like with McClain positioned at second base only, where are we going with Lux here? They're going to work him at second base and third base to start camp. ADP is close to 360, so in a 12-team league, he's like one of your last pick, the last pick potentially. What are your thoughts on Gavin Lux?
So I like him. I like that they added him. I like that they'll find a way to get Lux in the lineup against right-handed pitchers and create American. So a homestand for the Reds. He's the guy you kind of slot in there. I like what Lux did in the second half, committed to being a little bit more aggressive earlier in the count, tried to drive the ball a little bit more. I think you could see a little bit of a leap this year. I think you could see that potentially. I don't think you should have to project it necessarily, but I think he's definitely a guy that has an upside there that's palpable. I like it as a baseball move. From a fantasy perspective, it might get a little frustrating that there'll be times when he's not going to get a full week of at-bats, that maybe they have to face three left-handers in a given week. You're going to have to sit him. I like that it gives the Reds a better option against right-handed pitchers, though.
That's a great point, especially the right-handed pitcher part in the platoon. I think in order for him to have fantasy value, we don't root for them, but we'll require an injury to make that actually happen, to get regular playing time, and then it still might not be worth it if it's lefty-lefty. Austin Hayes, another new member of Cincinnati, had a few years back a good run there with Baltimore. Things have deteriorated a bit in the last few years. Injuries, illness, like a bad virus that took place.
Yeah.
That was just nasty. I actually had MLB Dream Picks from FTN on my Orioles preview a couple days ago. And he mentioned that the decline in his numbers also correlated with the wall in left field. So him and like Mountcastle started going opposite way. That could be something that changes. I don't know. But what are your thoughts on Hayes now coming into Great American, basically just hanging out in left field? And we've seen upside there.
Yeah, you're not kidding about how much he got hurt by his home park last year. 582 home OPS last year, 846 on the road. Yeah. So that gives you can dream on him and Austin Hayes being able, a guy that takes advantage of Great American small park there. It's funny that now he leaves and it's no longer Baltimore anymore. It's yep. just a normal park again. It's not quite the way it was before, Camden, but still, nonetheless, I think he's like the converse of Gavin Lux. And the problem is that's the wrong side of a platoon. You want him against, him to pound lefties. The problem is he faced more right-handed pitchers. And obviously last year was an extreme in terms of the splits, and it was just a down year all the way around. But he's traditionally been a much better hitter against lefties to begin with there. Over the last 3 years, about 70 points of OPS difference there. And I know OPS has its shortcomings as a stat. I think it's a quick and dirty way to look at it there. He might end up playing more against righties than you think. We'll see what happens in terms of placement there. We talked about Steer and where does he play? Where does Encarnacion Strand play? Where does Lux play? All these things kind of matter. Is DH going to be open? Is there going to be a spot for Noelvé Marte to make the team? And if not, well then, okay, that opens up one lineup spot there. But I think they're going to be doing a lot of feeling out in the first couple months of the season. They figure out their best lineup.
Yeah, makes sense indeed. And a guy that could platoon with Hayes or platoon with someone else in the outfield, Jake Fraley. Yep. Veteran of the Reds. We've seen the goods, the bads, but pretty much a platoon guy now. Is there any fantasy relevance to him, or is it just like a streamer on the right weeks?
Yeah, I think it's a streamer. It's a draft and hold type of player that you can kind of use. And the guy that's really aced out is Will Benson. I don't even know if he makes the team, let alone Stuart Fairchild, but we'll see about those guys. Those guys played, Fairchild played way more than any Reds fan wanted him to last year. Hopefully they avoid that fate.
Yeah, no, Fairchild. Some of the outfielders that came into play, and well, my team as well, I get it. Wonder where did they come from? Is it, name a player type thing? So, yeah. Yes. You mentioned Christian Encarnacion Strand earlier, CES. ADP's 238. Last year when we did the show, the optimism was through the roof for everybody, not just us, just people loved the idea of him and his power in that ballpark, in that lineup. And then obviously injuries just deterred everything. Looks like he's getting close to being ready to rock and roll. How are we feeling about CES? Because you already mentioned, you got Candelario in the way. Stevenson used to play first once in a while. Like there's a lot of hands in the mix there.
Yeah, and they're talking about Encarnacion Strand playing some third base also. Oh, in spring.
Last Encarnacion that did that, had a nickname E5.
Ah, that's true. But I love the parent, man. Oh, I loved him. That trade was good for the Reds, but it wasn't good for the Reds in a way. I mean, I like that. I'm glad that he thrived in Toronto. But anyhow, getting back to Encarnacion Strand, perfect world, I'd like to see him at first base. I just put him in there and leave him alone. But that doesn't seem like that's going to happen right away. Again, because they have a lot of moving parts. And it might be a platoon there, too. And if it is, that's bad. That means we're going to lose out on some at-bats there. Encarnacion Strand really pressed before he got hurt last year. That first week of the season, I think he struck out like 8 out of 11 plate appearances, then hit a walk-off homer to end the homestand again against the Nats. And then he went struggled again after that. I was like, okay, this is a launching point. No, it wasn't a launching point. That said, I think it's just such a small sample. Hopefully he doesn't press as much as he did last year.
Yeah, I would love to see. We've seen what he can do when he hits a baseball hard. Yeah. I like to see that on a regular basis in that ballpark.
Absolutely.
You have Santiago Espinal written down here. He is a heck of a utility player. Is there going to be some upside with him?
He is the outfield version of Stuart Fairchild, playing more than anybody really wants him to. Writers love him. He'll do anything that kind of helps the team win sort of guy. I think that he's not, for all he did, he still had a 651 OPS last year. You don't want that as a regular in your lineup. You want him to be the fill-in guy. You know, he was at a 391 plate appearances last year. We need you more at like 250.
Mm-hmm. No, that's very valuable. Great. Before I speak out of turn, yes, his age, veteran infielder off the bench. That's what he's good for.
Yep.
And then you mentioned Noelvi Marte earlier in the show, and that's been a conundrum because, again, all of us were excited about him last year.
Yeah.
And then injuries, steroids, you name it. We've had a lot of things with him recently. When he came back, it just didn't come. We thought it was rust at first. It was more than rust, it seemed like. So what are your thoughts this year? Because right now, it doesn't look like he might even make the team right now.
But that's like the prime buying opportunity in a way. Like you're getting him before the hype kicks in. Last year, you were paying a pretty decent premium for Marte. Keep in mind, this was a top 20 prospect at one point in time. Chris List, my former co-host and SiriusXM, still a good friend of mine, always said buy lowest. Well, this is the lowest, I think.
It is.
Yeah. You know, the consensus, if you read any like beat writer reports on Marte, it's always, oh, he's down. Well, of course, that's where he is right now. But what does he project to be? I think there's a scenario there where he gets sent down to begin the season. We see him May 15th and he doesn't lose that spot again. I mean, I think he's a real guy that changes all the fortunes of Lux and Encarnacion Strand and Steer, all the guys that we were talking about earlier there. If he fulfills his potential, then you're talking about a guy that's a lineup regular for a very long time. He's 23. Yeah, again, sure. Don't give up on Marte just yet, especially those of you in Dynasty Leagues. Trade for him now in Dynasty Leagues.
Yeah, ADP 360, so last pick type stuff. So interesting there, but Dynasties especially. I totally get the Dynasty aspect of it, 100% there. Take the chance, buy him on the cheap, and see where it goes. Let's head to the rotation. You mentioned Hunter Green. He turned into that ace last year because the biggest thing with him has always been how will he pitch at home with the home runs and this and that. The home runs dropped tremendously last year. Strikeouts were like still good, ratios were elite. You mentioned briefly all of that, but right now you have an ADP of 93. Are you paying that price for Hunter Green with half his games in Great American?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I do hate the ballpark for him, but the thing I did like is he did lower the home run rate a little bit there. It came at the cost of lowering the strikeouts just a little bit there, but what I like is he ditched the changeup, he introduced the splitter and curveball a little bit more. He's learning his craft, and I feel like he's not just a thrower. As before, you'd see him get to 0-2, and then he'd run into trouble a lot of times. Teams would start to work him. It was like Homer Bailey used to be, if you remember. Would always get ahead in the count and then have trouble finishing people off. I think Green learned a skill on how to finish batters off a little bit last year, and that's one of the things I like. Even though the swinging strike rate remained the same, but he cut down on the home runs. He cut down on the fly balls. His fly ball rate dropped to 0.75 ground ball to fly ball ratio. There, you'd love seeing that. It's a smart way of pitching in Great American.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. As long as he keeps that ball in the ballpark, stuff's filthy. Stay healthy. Keep it in the ballpark. Could be an elite pitcher, indeed. New Red, Brady Singer. Out goes Jonathan India, in comes Brady Singer. Twitter's always great for overreactions. That was a fun one when this trade took place. You either loved it or you really hated it, it felt like. I've always been a Singer fan. I know he's been volatile in the past. It could be, not the most dominating strikeout guy, but a ton of ground balls. What's your thoughts on Singer coming to Cincinnati now, right, with an ADP of 343?
There's value in being a league average pitcher in real life. I don't want that on my fantasy team. Last year was about as maybe not as good as it gets, but a pretty representative of a decent season. 371, 127. 127 doesn't help you.
No.
Well, that he's going to eat a lot of innings, but do you really want a lot of innings at a 1-3 whip, a 1-2-5 whip? I think there is a scenario there where he helps you, but I probably want to find someone else at that price.
Totally fair. Someone that I have been very, very excited about, and a lot of this due to Ryan Bloomfield's been bugging me about Nick Lodolo since I've met him. Mm-hmm. Big reason why it's never been really an elbow or a shoulder injury. It's always been fluky stuff, which gets me excited. Coming in with an ADP on Lodolo of 228. What are we thinking this year?
So I'm definitely in on that price with Lodolo. Again, we're talking about a guy that once projected to be a star. He still gets the swing and miss, even in a disaster season health-wise last year, 122 Ks on 115 innings. The best news about Lodolo is he had a regular, normal offseason. He was able to go start his workouts in October. He wasn't recovering from a fractured tibia. He didn't have any of that sort of rehab going on that he'd had in previous offseasons. Am I wish casting this a little bit? Probably. But I don't think you have to squint to see an upside here. And that's the thing I'm going for. This is at that price, you know, 220. What is he? Your SP5?
Yeah. Five or six.
Five or six. Yeah. I'll, you know, with the potential for being a top three starting pitcher for me at some point in time. Yeah. I'll take that risk reward matrix there.
Yep. I have a lot of shares already. So all about all right, that. Good. Nick Martinez is one that I just can't wrap my head around, and I've been told by some smart people that is foolish of me, but we'll see. To each their own. He made 16 starts, 142 innings, not a massive strikeout guy, but good ratios, one might say. Uh-huh. ADP comes in at 325. Is this guy I should be buying into, Jeff?
For that price? Sure, why not? But, you know, you're right in one thing. The K upside's not there. You know, as good as Martinez was last year, swing strike rate of 11%, 20.4% K percentage. And that's probably buffeted a little bit by his relief work earlier in the year. I love how he finished as a starter. He is a starter now. I don't think there's as much risk about that, especially with what they're paying him after he accepted their qualifying offer. A lot of people are like, why are you doing this, Reds? Well, he was actually 142 innings last year. He stayed healthy. Mm-hmm. He proved that he could be a starter. Now, again, you kind of want to question late season stats. I will say that, you know, a couple of his really good outings were against good teams. You know, he had a start against Atlanta. I know, granted, Atlanta in September wasn't Atlanta 2023. Good start at Minnesota. Good start against the Astros. I like seeing that. I wouldn't go out of my way to land him, but I think he's a solid, like, glob pitcher, if you will, to borrow the Paul Spores / Scott White term. He's a good glob guy.
Yeah, that's a great, he's a glob. There's a lot of guys like him, but that ADP, like you mentioned, I get it at that point in time.
Yeah.
Okay, we talked about pitchers with prospect pedigree. Abbott was one of them in a roundabout way, not quite Lodolo Green-esque, but he was talked about in the minor league system. And last year, through 138 innings, a guy that strikeouts have dropped once he became a big leaguer from the minor league numbers, but ratios somehow stay intact. Like, you look at all the outliers, they say this should not be happening with Andrew Abbott, but it continues to do it, and I get fooled. ADP is 354, Jeff. Should I continue to just watch him be fooled?
Hard pass.
Yeah.
He's got the shoulder strain. He's still behind, just a note yesterday that he's behind schedule, and missed the last 6 weeks of the season. I think there was a lot of smoke and mirrors going on. I root like heck for him to be real, but I don't think he's real.
I got you there. Any other starting pitchers we should keep an eye on, like Graham Ashcraft? I'm kind of over that story, but maybe I'm wrong there. Anybody else of relevance right now?
Rhett Lauder is getting a delayed start to the spring training. He's the guy that, you know, made a couple of starts at the end of the season. Obviously, 14 walks and 30 innings shows that he's still got some development left. But last year was his first professional season. He was drafted in 2023 and didn't pitch at all and any games, at least in 2023, after getting drafted as their first round pick. But they're expecting a lot out of him in the second half of the season.
Very good. Alexis Diaz is the closer for now in Cincinnati. ADP is 152. He keeps getting saves, but you mentioned ratios and whatnot. That gets dicey with Alexis Diaz. And they brought in like a Taylor Rogers. They have Emilio Pagan. Again, I'm not vouching for these guys, but they're bringing in veterans that have saved in the past, per se. You've got some names down here as well that might be better saves options on the sheet. So I'll let you handle the Reds bullpen right now.
Yeah, so there's some scary statistical indicators here with Diaz. His K percentage dropped from 30.1% to 22.7. Swing and miss went from 15.6 to 11.4. His walks are at 12.8%. You know, these are all bad, bad things. He had a full offseason again. He was better later in the season, albeit with one bad hiccup even in September or late August. He had a really bad outing against Oakland, but the final month of the season and didn't allow a run. So there's reasons to be a little optimistic with Alexis Diaz. And you mentioned that they brought people in. They brought people who used to be good relievers. Mm-hmm. Scott Barlow, Taylor Rogers, Emilio Pagan last year, and Pagan, who knows what he spent most of the year being hurt. The sleeper name to pay attention to is Tony Santian. 27-year-old was an opener a little bit last year. 46 strikeouts, 9 walks, and 30 innings last year after missing a good chunk of 2023. I think he's a sneaky option if Diaz falters. He might be the fifth option, Santian might be, but he's a guy I think like in draft and hold leagues, draft champions leagues, things of that nature. Stash him away if you're looking for a stash.
Good. I like the fact that you mentioned him. I can't remember. There's one other show I did doing something where someone brought that up and we're all like, huh, interesting. So the fact the Reds person that actually knows this is nice to hear for sure. Last question I have on players here. Any other prospects besides Rhett Lauder that we might be looking forward to this year?
Yeah, a lot of their guys are up, but I would say, you know, Cam Collier might be a guy, although he was at high A. Chase Burns, last year's first round draft pick, how quickly did they advance him? You know, another Wake Forest pitcher. You know, they spent a very premium draft pick on Burns, extended him to big league camp and spring training. We'll see where he goes. And then Edwin Arroyo. I've seen some trade speculation on Arroyo. He's another guy that missed all last season with an injury. But Arroyo was another highly touted prospect, came over from the Mariners in the Luis Castillo trade. You know, he had torn labrum in his left shoulder, another guy that got hurt in spring training last year. So another guy to kind of keep an eye on to see how quickly he advances. Obviously, shortstop's kind of occupied right now.
Kind of, yeah.
But, you know, hey, draft good players and see if they find a spot. He's another guy that I think we should pay attention to.
All righty. The last question I have for you as a Reds fan, now you can take the analyst cap off. How do you think 2025 goes? What's your prediction for the team?
81-81. It's very mid. I think the Cubs are probably the best team in the division. The Brewers always find a way to win more than they're supposed to. You know, I'd say that their sum is greater than the whole of their parts. We'll see what Terry Francona does. Does he exact a little bit more value out of every player? That's the one thing I would watch for a little bit there. How much of a difference does the manager make? I didn't really have much of a problem with David Bell, but there were things like base running mistakes, more errors last year. Does Francona tighten that stuff up a little bit? And how much of a difference does that make? If it does, well, then that's great. I would have liked to seen a bigger splash in free agency, a bigger trade splash, but I also know what the Reds are.
Got to get that Candelario money off the books first before that can take place. But all right, Jeff, I appreciate it as always. Looking forward to seeing what the Reds do this season. Before we leave, let everybody know where they can find you and what you got going on.
You can hit me up on Twitter at Jeff_Erickson. On Blue Sky, I'm Jeff-Erickson. And then, of course, RotoWire. Check us out, rotowire.com/pod. That'll give you a free 2-day trial, peek behind the paywall. No credit card or anything like that is required. We just want you to get a taste of the site. We think you'll like it and you'll want to subscribe afterward.
Yep, go check it out, everybody, rotowire.com as usual. And Jeff, thanks as always. We'll chat again sometime.
Awesome. Thanks, Bubba.
All right, everybody, this is Bench with Bubba, episode 740, your Reds team preview. Catch you all next time.